This is Brian Kaplowitz, and you're listening to the Speaker Match Radio Series, Success Strategies for Speakers from the Pros. This is a live show where we interview top experts in the speaking industry and business to provide emerging speakers with marketing strategies and other business building advice. If you're listening live, you can participate in this call online right now by going to speakermatch.com/radio.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. This is Brian Kaplowitz, your host, and welcome to this episode of Speaker Match Radio. Today, we are going to be speaking with a very special guest, Michael Haig. And Michael is a story consultant with a phenomenal background. He has worked with every major studio and network. He consults with screenwriters, novelists, filmmakers, even attorneys and public speakers throughout the world. He has coached writers, producers, stars, directors on all kinds of projects for people like Tom Cruise, Reese Witherspoon, Julia Roberts, Morgan Freeman, and I believe Will Smith. This is going to be Michael's fourth time on Speaker Match Radio. And once again, he's going to critique stories that have been submitted by you in the Speaker Match community. Today's format is a little bit different from the usual 60-minute interview because Michael has been gracious enough to spend the next 90 minutes with us going through some of your story submissions. And we will also open up the line for questions and really deep delve into the art of telling captivating stories for onstage presentations. In previous times that Michael has been on with us, we solicited 3-minute clips, and it was a real challenge. So this year we allowed for a total of 5 minutes for each clip that you're going to hear today. And you're going to hear Michael reference his book, Storytelling Made Easy, where he highlights his 6-step process in more detail. I would be remiss if I didn't let you know that his book is available on Amazon or directly on his website at storymastery.com. We will definitely provide a link to that in the show notes on the page at speakermatch.com/radio. And you'll also be able to access the replay on iTunes.com. We have a lot of ground to cover, so let's bring Michael into the call. Welcome, Michael.
Good to be here. Good to be back, I guess I should say.
It's great to have you back. It's always enjoyable to have you with us. I think that everybody loves hearing a good story and learning how to craft a better story, especially speakers who are really just trying to do the best that they possibly can do and deliver the best possible presentation that they can. I think that your advice really helps a lot of people to take their speaking business to the next level. So I'm really excited for today's call and letting you do some, like we said, deep diving into some of the content that we have.
Yeah, me too. It will be fun and hopefully profitable for everybody listening.
All right, we got a lot of people on the line with us today, so this is great. You know what? Today we're going to start off. We have a couple people that have submitted things, and Dave Davlin is our first guest. He needs to be off the line by 12:30. So if it's okay, I'm going to go ahead and get right into playing Dave's submission so that we can get you to work on that. Okay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, this is a good one because one of the things, the first questions you have to ask is about who the hero of the story is going to be. And that's one of the things I want to address when we hear Dave's speech. Dave is on the line right now, right?
Dave is on the line right now. He should be on the line. And for those that that don't know Dave, he speaks to a wide audience from students to CEOs about developing vision and a sense of purpose. And typically, he delivers his message in the form of a motivational and inspiring keynote. Let's take a listen.
You never know. The little small things you do every day that are insignificant to you, you don't think twice about them. They can mean the world to somebody else. Whenever I travel, I carry a very special coin with me that reminds me of that principle. Because I still go and speak to kids occasionally, elementary kids, people like that. I have to keep up my basketball skills. Even at my age now, I still practice all my dribbling and everything. And the place I practice is at the YMCA there in San Antonio. And usually when I go in, they drop a curtain at midcourt. It's a solid curtain. You can't see through it. So one side I'll practice. The other side people can shoot baskets. Or I'll go into a racquetball room. But this particular day I go in, the curtain's been dropped. So I start practicing my skills on one side. Now I can hear one guy on the other side shooting baskets by himself. We can't see each other. We can hear each other. So I get ready to take a breather. I go sit down. I put the basketballs on my feet. Now we're at an angle where we can see each other. And he looks over and sees the stars on the ball. So he walks over to me and says, "Hey, what are all those stars on the ball for?" I said, "Well, I travel and perform, but I also speak." He said, "What do you speak about?" I said, "I speak to people about finding purpose in their own life and making a difference for other people." He said, "Man, I could really use some of that right now." And I said, "Why is that?" He said, "My name is Tony Ramirez. I was a combat medic in Iraq. And man, I saw a lot of bad stuff." He said, I had friends that never made it home. He said, "I was out in the field at times and I was working on guys with no legs that would try to stand up and fight." And he said, "I watched all that stuff go on." And I was very honest. I said, "Tony, do you have PTSD?" He said, "Yeah, I got that, but that's not my biggest problem." I said, "What is?" He said, "The biggest problem is this." He said, "Even though combat was tough on me and the military was tough on me," he said, "at least then I had purpose in my life. I was Sergeant Tony Ramirez. I was a guy that could save your life out there in the field. I was a guy they came to with their problems. I was a competitive boxer. I was a competitive kickboxer. I was somebody, and now I'm back here, and they label me disabled, and they give me a check and some drugs and a counselor, and they say, 'Good luck to you.'" He goes, "Man, I'm nobody anymore. I don't have purpose in my life. Man, I struggle with that." I said, "Tony, I wish I could do something for..." I said, "Wait a minute." I said, "Listen, I just wrote a book called The Game Winning Three that talks about this, and it's not in print. It's at the printer. But it's on my computer, and if you like, I'll email it to you if you'll give me your email address." He says, "Man, I would love that." So he gave me his email address. I emailed him my book. My book, the whole book, has color in it. He printed out every page, and he would text me, "I'm at the Spurs game. Look what I got with me." And he had that book with him. "I'm at my daughter's basketball game. I got the book with me." So this went on for about a week. Finally, about a week, I get a text from Tony. He says, "Hey, can you meet me at Panera Bread? I got something for you." Now, I don't mean this disrespectfully. I'm not military, but I've heard about PTSD. I got a soldier that just read my book who's got something for me, and I was a little nervous, I have to admit. So I did the brave thing. I said, "Can I bring my wife?" He goes, "Yeah, you can bring your wife." So I showed up at Panera Bread, opened the door, and there was Tony in the middle of the restaurant at the table all by himself. He's got his head down, looks up and sees me. You would have thought a general walked in. He stood up so fast he knocked his chair over. And he walked over to me and said, "Hey, Tony, how's it going?" He goes, "Man, I'm doing great." I said, "Let's get some coffee and talk about what's on your mind." He said, "We can do that, but first I got to do this. I won't be able to do it." And he reached into his pocket and he pulled out this coin and he gave it to me. And I didn't know what it was. He knew I played golf, and I said, "Tony, this is beautiful, but if you think I'm going to use this as a ball marker, it's too big. The other guys are going to get mad at me." He goes, no, Dave. "That's a command coin." And I said, "What is that?" He says, "Well, in the military, if you have acts of bravery or great service, this is how they reward you." He says, "But the thing about it is, give it back to me. I want to give it to you the way they gave it to me." And he put it in the palm of his hand. And he took my hand. And he pushed the two together. And he gave me the coin. He said, "That's the way the colonel gave it to me. And that's the way I want to give it to you." And I said, "Wow, Tony, this is beautiful. But I can't take this, man. It means too much to you." He goes, "No, I got two other ones. But I want you to have this one." And I said, "Why do you want me to have it?" He said, "Well, the day I met you, you didn't know this. But man, I was at an awful, awful point in my life. I was at a low point that some of my comrades got to and ended it all. Man, I was right there. But you took the time to talk to me. And you took the time to send me that book. And I read that book many times. And it showed me that I could start over and I could have purpose in my life again." And he said, "I'm going to tell you something. You saved my life. And I want to say thank you." And he gave me this coin. Tony's story has a great ending. Went back to school, got his degree. When I first met Tony, he wouldn't look you in the eye. He had so much pain. He started giving speeches in his class, and his classmates said, "Man, this guy's a natural. He's a great natural speech giver." You know, he called me one day on the phone. He was a little upset. He said, "I worked so hard. I've always wanted to make the dean's list. I didn't make it, though. They put me on something called the president's list." What is that? I don't even know what that is. He made the president's list. And about 2 months ago, he and his wife gave birth to twins. And he sent me a text. And he said, it wouldn't have happened without you. And I said, no, Tony, you always had it in you. You just had to let it come out. It's not about me, it's about you. You know, folks, you never know the little small things you do every day that are insignificant to you, that mean nothing to you, can mean the world to somebody else.
Okay. Can we hear from the speaker here? Because I have a couple questions I want to ask, and then I have a few suggestions I'd like to make, or at the least, this is a very good example of one of the things I want to talk about.
Yeah, this is Dave. I'm on the line.
Oh, cool. Okay, first of all, terrific speech already. I mean, you have a great stage presence. I was immediately involved. I loved the way you started. You created a very vivid setting when you talked about the basketball court, the curtain, and the you used dialogue. You know a lot of great techniques and principles, and the story works, or the speech works very well as it is. But I want to ask you a couple things and maybe suggest something you might consider, even if not for this speech, maybe for future ones. But what in presenting this speech, what is the action you want your audience to take when after hearing this speech? Are you wanting them to buy your book? Are you just wanting to inspire them to go contribute to other people's lives? Are you wanting to get hired to be a speaker again? What are your primary objectives, or what's the action you want your audience to take when hearing this?
Well, the action I want them to take is the second one you mentioned. I want them to understand how important it is that their lives make a difference for other people. That's true success, is what you do for others and making a difference in their life. And that's the whole purpose of giving that speech.
Okay. Let me clarify, because I don't know how familiar you are with my process. But when I talk about the hero of the story, I'm not talking about someone who is heroic. I'm just talking about the main character. It's the character that the audience is going to empathize with and root for. It's the character whose desire drives the story forward. I say a hero is generally not someone who is heroic at the start of the story, although they have the potential to become heroic as they go on the journey that the story presents, as they're pursuing whatever the goal is that they're pursuing in the story. So in this story, who do you regard as the hero?
I actually regard the audience as the hero in this one.
That one doesn't count. The audience to empathize with the character who's the hero, and we'll be talking about that more, because they're going to participate in the story. They're going to subconsciously become that character. But do you want the audience to see themselves as you, or see themselves as Tony?
Oh, I would definitely say to see themselves as me, because I was just a person who took some time to spend with a soldier and just to make myself available. And I had no clue at the moment I would become the hero. I was just doing what I thought a normal person should do.
Okay, so here is the danger that you can encounter. I don't know that in this case it would be an illustration, but close enough. The worry is, whenever you make yourself the hero of the story, that you will come across, there's really two dangers. One is that you'll come across as just patting yourself on the back. Like, aren't I grand, because look at what I did. In this case, look what I did for this guy, and isn't that terrific? The other danger, this is not applied to you, but I want to give to everybody else, is you want to be very clear who it is you want your audience to empathize with. In this case, it would be you. If what you want the audience to do, whatever you want the audience to do, the hero should be the person that learns to do that in the course of the story. So if that's the case with this story, what I would suggest is a couple things. One is that for you as the hero, there's no real conflict in the story because you just happen to be there. You heard him and you say, well, I could give you a copy of my book. You gave him the copy of the book and then you were rewarded with the coin and feeling good. But there's not a lot of emotion to that because you weren't the one with the conflict overcome. It was him. So you could do one of two things, I think. One is you could tell the story in such a way that you had to overcome some obstacle in order to help him. One possibility might be, and this might not be factual for that moment, but it might have happened other places and you can consolidate it. It might be that initially you felt like you didn't have the time to help him, or that you were very busy, or there might be something else that wasn't really making this easy for you. So you had to come to realize in the course of this journey that it didn't matter where it came from, that you needed to learn what you wanted your audience to learn, and that is the rewards that come from helping someone else. But if you don't have an obstacle standing between you and accomplishing that goal, then it's just like, okay, I did this, you should do this, but it doesn't really tell your audience how to overcome whatever inner or external obstacles they face. Because we all tell ourselves, yeah, we'd like to help people whatever way we could, but you know, on a day-to-day basis, what we do is, yeah, I'd like to, but I'm busy, or I have my own problems, or I've got to be here or be there, or, you know, that person, you know, isn't anyone who matters to me. But because you didn't have any of those feelings, then you haven't given your audience the experience of overcoming those internal obstacles, or if there are external obstacles, that, and in a certain way, finding the courage to do what you did. The other thing you might consider doing, although it might not get to quite the same place, is that you could focus a bit more on Tony, because when you got to the point of giving him the book, then a lot of it was he called and said, look, I'm looking at your book. This is great. I really appreciate what you did. And you did kind of go through some of what he'd accomplished. But I think it may be a more powerful story if you give more conflict to him. I mean, he told you he was at rock bottom, but then you said he read your book and he went on and did these things, but it doesn't really identify what kind of struggle he went through in going to school, in making the president's list, in finding, I don't remember if he was with someone when you first met him or if that happened during this, but it may be that you shorten the beginning, and then instead of just saying, I gave him his book, and as a result of having my book, he did all these things, I gave him my book, and then I didn't hear from him for some time. Or when I talked to him again, 18 months had passed, and he said, I've got to tell you what happened. And then he goes into more detail telling you his story that you're relating to us about, you know, I ran into this problem when I tried to get into school. But then I read the part of your book that said this, and I thought, okay, I can do that, because you'll do two things. You'll get us more emotionally involved with the conflict he's facing, and you will also shift the focus of the value away from yourself and toward the principles that are in your book. So it doesn't sound like, look, you know, you can get all these rewards that I got because I did this, rather than because that Tony learned this from the book and this from the book and this from the book, and I got rewarded with this coin. And you can see, you never know when you're going to have that opportunity, but more important than that, because Tony found the courage to do A, B, and C, he was the real winner of the situation. Does that make sense to you, or do you follow what I'm saying there?
Well, if you listen to the whole, you know, it's an hour-long keynote, it's based on three things: the person you become, the memories you create, and the difference you make. And this story is told towards the end, and it's part of the section, The Difference That You Make. And that's not mine. I'm not sure who's.
No, no, that's me. That's my problem. Sorry, and I don't have any way to mute it, so we'll just have to let it ring in the background.
But it's part of the story. It's part of the portion of the difference that you make, and the whole purpose of telling the story is to get the audience to understand that there's opportunities around you all the time, but you just have to take those opportunities. You have to look for them and take advantage of them. There's an opportunity around you all the time to help somebody. All I did was just happen to reach out to a guy and spend some time talking with him, and I had no clue how important that was to him.
Yeah, I understand. And as I said, it works really well on that level. What I'm encouraging everybody to do is look for the ways you can inject more conflict into the story. And look for ways or be careful to avoid a story where you're making yourself the hero that is already acting heroic. And this is just the reward you got, rather from taking us on the journey of you finding the value of doing this and overcoming some obstacles of your own. So in that regard, and as I said, maybe in this particular instance, the story works fine as it is, but I'm always looking for those kinds of principles or those kinds of concerns when it comes to making yourself the hero of the story, and with any story, the need for as much conflict as possible. This is not devoid of conflict, because the great part of the conflict is what we learn about his background. When you have him through dialogue saying, you know, I have no meaning in my life and so on, I would have really liked to hear more about his journey to find that meaning with your help or with the principles of the book, but go through more of his journey and the obstacles he was able to overcome by doing that. And then I would come back thinking, yeah, I may not have been through the rugged life he has, but we all have times when we feel like we don't have enough meaning or we're not accomplishing enough, and you can offer the principles and the steps to take to do that and overcome those. So it's just another way to kind of approach the story.
Yeah, that's why when you asked me who the hero of the story was, that's why I said to the audience, you can't kind of make a reference that I made myself the hero. I was trying to make out the hero as anybody who will just take time to do even a small thing for someone becomes a hero. It wasn't about me being a hero. It's just I didn't even know what I was doing was making a difference, but just taking the time to share with somebody something.
Yeah, I understand. I understood that exactly. And all I'd say is if there's a way you could inject some of the obstacles we all manufacture or have that stop us from doing that, stop us from helping others, and stop us from making those gestures, then it might inspire your audience more, or it might reach them more deeply, because they would recognize, yeah, I've stopped myself in that way, but if I look at it like you did, then I might be able to.
Sure.
All right. Well, Dave, thank you very much. Go ahead, Michael.
Well, I was just going to see if anyone else had any questions. I know you have to take off there because you're under a deadline for time. But if anyone listening has any questions about what I just said or comments and so on.
Yeah, I've still got a couple
of
minutes.
Okay, if you do have – all right, and I'll just let everybody else know if you do have any questions or anything you'd like to add to the conversation. You can dial *2 on your telephone keypad, or if you're connected through the online web service, you can click the raise hand button. Go ahead, Dave.
No, I've got about 5 more minutes that I can, if anybody wants to ask me a question or a comment, I'm here about 5 more minutes.
I'll go ahead and mute your line. I'll let you listen in, and if you have any more questions, just raise your hand. We do have a caller with a question. Go ahead. Whoever just raised their hands, go ahead. It says anonymous, so your microphone may be muted on your headset or something, but I don't hear you right now.
It's a tough question to answer.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and lower your hand. If you have a question again, just raise your hand again. Okay, Michael, do you want to move on to the next one, or did you have other comments that you wanted to make?
Let's let our special, our first guest here take off, because I know you're under the gun to get to another meeting. But I really appreciate you providing the speech, and I hope that was helpful, and thanks for sharing that. And it is it's a terrific speech already. It's very clear that you have wonderful stage presence, and your message is really strong and valuable. So thanks for sharing that with us.
Sure thing.
All right, Michael. Let's see. We have another call, another recording that was submitted by Annie Dyke. That's about 5 minutes long. And Annie does a really good job of setting up her story. So I'm going to go ahead and just let her take it from here. Here we go.
I was once, like many of you, a hardworking and high-demand professional. I was a trial attorney working 70 hours a week, billing 60, for years, so much so that I often found myself falling asleep at my desk without any recollection of when I'd shut my eyes. And I realized it's because I never took a vacation. Now, I could tell you about my years as a medical malpractice defense attorney, the trials I handled, the partnership, and the big salary and big title that I'd worked so hard for, and why I turned all of that down to sail across the big Atlantic Ocean. But I think you'll understand better if I share a moment with you from my first vacation. Now, what I decided to do to get away from work and really unplug was to hop on a 35-foot sailboat and sail 500 nautical miles offshore across the Gulf of Mexico. And that makes it very easy to unplug that way, because I can assure you, you don't have cell signal out there. You can't just call work, much less someone you might need for help. So you are truly offshore and checked out. And I was one among a crew of three. I knew very little about sailing. It was all in theory and books. And I could barely tell the bow from the stern. And when you do that, throw a new crew together on a new boat to you, it's likely something's going to go wrong. And we definitely had many things go wrong, but this was one of my favorites. The second night on passage, and we'd been about 18 hours getting our teeth kicked in out there. It's amazing, a 15,000-pound boat and what those waters can do to it. We were being tossed around like a rubber duck in a bathtub, and the crew's getting shoved and pushed and, you know, just falling all over each other sometimes and running into things. And there's also one other person on this boat, too, that's getting flailed and clanged and banged. And this person was ready to jump ship. Now, on a boat like this, you usually have the big sailboat and a small boat that you use to go to and from shore. And the small boat on this boat was suspended above the water on these bracket arms off the back of the boat. And while I am wet and exhausted and cold and tired and having the time of my life, I am nowhere near ready to get off that boat. Small boat was ready to jump ship. He'd been bashed around out back there for about a day and a half, and he was ready to go. And it was fine with me. I was like, see you later, small boat. I'm on the time of my life passage, so just moving on down the road. Until the captain told me if small boat goes, there's a very good chance he could rip a huge hole in big boat, which could sink big boat. So all of a sudden, small boat's departure became very important to me, and I made this makeshift surgical sailboat tray where I had scissors and a steak knife and a hacksaw. And sure enough, later that night, in big waves of black denim and just bashing around, small boat jumps ship, and he is just swamping himself. He's this just huge anchor behind the boat, dragging it down, pulling it over to the port side and starting to swamp the cockpit. And the captain yells, cut it off! And I wasn't much of a sailor at the time, but growing up in Alabama, I darn sure knew how to use a hacksaw. So I went to it furiously, just cutting these lines and throwing these wet, salty knots back into the cockpit. And I still, to this day, I struggle to see it through my own eyes, see my hands, see the flashlight, see what I was doing. I really remember the scene from afar, as if I was out of body experience watching myself, and I'm stretched out over the water, one leg hooked back on the stern rail, and I'm just hacking away with this hacksaw. And it is one of the coolest moments of my life. I'm so proud of myself because it was a huge accomplishment. We cut the small boat off, and the big boat, like she had just put down a 50-pound rucksack, was like, oh, you know, comfortable. And then we're safe, and we sailed the boat across the Gulf of Mexico. And it just rejuvenated me. It was so invigorating to find a new passion that I knew had to be incorporated into my life to find balance. I had found new, you know, excitement and purpose, and I brought that with me every day to work since then. And it's because I checked out and I took a vacation, and I challenge you to do the same. My office has changed many times since that moment, but I can assure you I have never since fallen asleep at my desk.
Okay, so I think what I'd like to do is this. I would like to talk a bit about how I approach story, and then I'd like to, using this as an example of some of those principles, and then talk to the speaker and ask her some questions and see sort of how that might apply and what suggestions I might have and so on. Does that sound good, Brian?
That sounds fine. And Annie, if you can raise your hand, dial star 2, or click your hand raise, I'll know which line you're on, so
okay.
I can bring you in.
So Annie, you'll have to be patient for a few minutes because I do want to get into this specifically and get at some of the elements of the story. But I think it'll be easier to explain my suggestions if everybody's sort of gone through my process. So I'm going to quickly talk about what I consider kind of the essential components of a story. And the first thing to understand when you're telling a story, well, I think the first thing to understand is, as a speaker, it's not that you have the option of telling a story, in my opinion. You only have the necessity of telling a story. I don't think any longer it's possible to be a great speaker without having good stories as a part of your, you know, as part of your speeches and woven into the presentations you're making, regardless of the kind of presentation, whether it's a keynote, whether it's a workshop, whether it's an instructional speech where you're even showing someone how to do something. I think that it can't just be data and instruction and facts and suggestions or principles and so on. You really need to back it up with a story. And the reason you need to do that is because more than any of those other elements of a speech, a story is your most direct route to eliciting emotion. And if, as a speaker, you can't get your audience to feel, you're going to have a very hard time getting them to take whatever action you want them to take, whether it's to go home and be inspired to do something that you recommend in terms of your principles or action to take and so on, whether it's to get hired to be a speaker in more situations, whether it's to use the speech to market your services as a consultant or to sell your book or to sell a product or whatever it is. You must be able to get that audience to feel something, because it's in those moments of emotional involvement that they are going to be most likely to make the decision or to be inspired to take the action you want them to take. So I don't consider stories optional any longer. And if you understand that your primary objective must be to elicit emotion, then that must be what every element of your speech is designed to do. Everything else is secondary. Now, to create that emotion and give that effective speech, as I talked about earlier, your first job is to decide who is going to be the hero of that story. Now, your choice is really either yourself or someone else, and there are advantages and disadvantages to both. When it comes to choosing yourself as the hero, that has the advantage of creating the greatest connection between you and the audience. If the story is properly told, then this The story about yourself is going to move the audience to connect to you, to feel an empathy with you, to identify with you, to feel they can trust you, to feel like they want to hear what you have to say, to feel like you are one of them, and that if you can find the courage you found or accomplish the goals you achieved, then so might we in the audience. So it's the best way to get close to your audience, and it is also a great way to convey the principles you live by or the principles that you use in your business if you're trying to promote your business as a speaker or as a consultant or as a business leader trying to establish your brand or whatever that might be. The downside that I touched on earlier with making yourself the hero is you want to be careful about not making it just seem like a story that is self-aggrandizing. You have to be careful that your audience isn't thinking, well, doesn't she think she's great? She has a superior attitude in some way. Now, there are ways to avoid that. They're, fairly simple and straightforward. The main one being, if you start out as someone who's struggling in some way and who faces the same fears or obstacles or desires as all the rest of us do in a more universal way, and then you take us on the journey to the success you achieved, then we'll celebrate your victory. But if you start out saying, well, I'm successful and I'm rich and I know the secret of life and I only hope you can too and I'll tell you how to do that, then you're immediately pushing your audience back. So you got to be careful about that when you tell a story about yourself as the hero. The alternative is tell a story about someone else who is the hero. This is, in my experience, not used nearly enough by most speakers. Because if you tell a story about someone else who, by following your principles, who, by following your process, who, because they hired you as a consultant, who, because they employed the principles you stand for, if that person succeeded, then your audience will identify with that character and you will take your audience through the success that they achieved by following your principles. And then you've actually given them the emotional experience of doing what you're asking them to do. Because remember, they're subconsciously becoming that hero because they empathize deeply enough with the character you're creating or the character you've made to your hero. So you have those two options. Once you've picked your hero, whichever one it is, you want to take that hero through six basic steps. And the first step is what I call the setup. This is where you introduce the hero, living his everyday life, before anything extraordinary happened. So when Annie started her story, she started out saying her everyday life was an attorney. You were practicing a certain kind of law, a certain kind of litigation. Now I don't remember what that one was. But this was her day-to-day life. We got the impression overworked, or if not overworked, at least her life was pretty much consumed with work. She said she'd never taken a vacation before. She was working these long hours. And we start empathizing, because one of the ways to create empathy is to make the hero the victim of some undeserved misfortune. So if the hero is facing some obstacle, if they're a victim in some way, or if they're in some kind of jeopardy. Some stories will be about someone who just got a negative medical diagnosis and now they're in danger of ill health or death or whatever it might be. And some people are afraid of losing their job or losing their home or losing the love of their life or whatever. That would be jeopardy. Sometimes people are helping others with their conflicts, and that makes them empathetic because they are a good-hearted, kind person. So when we meet the hero living her everyday life, you want to reveal something that will get the audience to identify and empathize with that character. And one of the best ways to do that too, or one of the added layers, is if you convey the sense that the character is stuck in some way. And that's how we felt about Annie, or feel about Annie at the start of her story, is there's a sense that she's kind of spinning her wheel. She's very active. She's working hard, and she's not doing good work and as an attorney and so on. But we get the sense that there's something missing from her life. And what we will discover is it's balance in her life. So that's step one. Step two is then what I call the crisis. Because in that everyday life, there has to be a moment, a tipping point, where something happens that has never happened before that is going to move the character to take action. So, Annie, in your story, one of the things that we didn't really get clearly is why, after all this time you didn't take a vacation, you finally did take a vacation. And if you reveal that finally there was a day when I was, you know, I was at work, or I was walking home from work and I passed out, or I got very ill, or I got a memo and I just couldn't take it anymore and I decided this has to stop. And the next day I put in for 2 weeks vacation. But we need to hear that tipping point so we know your story is moving from, in a certain way, passivity into action. That you now have a problem. The tipping point being something that is the straw that broke the camel's back and made you say, I needed a vacation. And then you have, or I needed to find balance. And then, in response to that tipping point, you're going to have a period where, or your hero in anyone's speech is going to have a period where they have to figure out, okay, now I realize things are not good. What am I going to do about this? I know I have to get balance in my life. What am I going to do? And so it's figuring out, what do I really want? And out of that will come the moment when you decide, I know what my goal is. I want to accomplish X. That's the way I think I can find balance. Or that's the way I can find success. Or that's the way I can find true love. Or that's the way I can feel more fulfilled. Or whatever it might be. So your goal was quite clear, because then you said you decided to take a cruise across the Gulf of Mexico, where you were one of a crew of three people. Oftentimes in your stories, the hero will encounter some kind of mentor or guide that helps them figure out what they're going to do, or helps them formulate the goal and then actually helps them achieve the goal. There isn't that kind of character in Annie's story. It's not necessary that you have to have that, but oftentimes, if you think about movies, we're talking about Obi-Wan in Star Wars, or Lyle Logue in The King's Speech, or Donkey and Shrek, or whatever it might be. It's that sidekick, it's that guru, it's that wise person that is going to give them the answer and help them on the journey. When you're making someone else the hero, oftentimes you will put yourself in the role of guide if you are the consultant or the author or the helper in some way that helped them achieve that goal. Especially that's valuable if you're doing a story trying to get clients as a consultant or customers for your product or something like that. So we have the setup, the everyday life, and then the tipping point that is going to move the character action and make them figure out what is the goal that I think will lead me to overcome this crisis that I had. That's going to and go to a place where I'm in a better space, where I fill that missing piece. So I better shut up for a minute because I've gone on and on. Brian, is there anything you want to ask me about any of that before we go on to steps 3 and 4?
Nope. Annie is on the line with us, though, so she is available to have a conversation with you.
Okay, so we'll ask Annie, is what I was saying clear so far?
Yes, Michael, definitely the why. I know exactly the moment you're talking about. I couldn't work it into 5 minutes, unfortunately, but it was my first trial, and it was just draining and exhausting, and I was down 10 pounds and just almost couldn't care about the verdict by then, and so that moment was, I need a vacation.
Yeah. And what would make it even stronger is if what you just described is still kind of an overall situation. You'd lost weight, it was grueling, you were tired, but try and remember what was the moment, the real moment that you decided that's it? Was it when the verdict was delivered? Did you was it when you got sick? What was that specific event that took you from I should someday I want to get out of this to I have to do something right now? And because the more vivid and specific that moment is, the more powerful the story will be. Okay. So,
yeah, great advice.
Yeah, so you got your goal, which was to cross the Gulf of Mexico. Okay, now we go into steps 3 and 4. Step 3 is pursuit, and step 4 is conflict. So I separate them because they're distinct and the opposite in a way, but they're intertwined through the story. And what that means is you want to be specific about at least one of the steps you took to achieve the goal. So in this case, Annie, what you did was the overall goal was to get to, I don't know if you actually told us which direction you were going, if you were trying to get to Mexico or you're trying to get to Florida or wherever it was. I probably didn't know at the time. Yeah, but that could be. But you wanted to get to land after launching or whatever it is. That was your goal, to complete the crossing of the Gulf. Okay, but so you didn't tell us every single thing that happened on that journey. You just zeroed in on one in particular, and that is the storm where your job was to take care of the small boat that was going to capsize the big boat. And so that was the specific goal you were trying to go after. And the conflict is simply the obstacles that your hero in a story is going to encounter and have to overcome in order to achieve the goal. The conflict is critical because your goal is to elicit emotion, and the emotion in a story grows out of conflict, not desire. The desire to cross the Gulf is fine, but you could cross the Gulf and get in one of those cruise ships, and it's not going to have that many obstacles except the crowds on the ship. So I've been on one of those ships. But anyway, so you want the obstacles to be as great as possible, meaning as the hurdles have to be as high as possible. And you don't have to list every single obstacle, but you want to zero on one. So the obstacle here was, it was the storm, it was the boat swinging around, it was having to cut it loose before something bad happened, and those kinds of things. So it's as the hero is moving forward, what obstacles have to be overcome. And those are intertwined through steps 3 and 4. Then we come to step 5, the climax. The climax is simply the finish line. Your hero has been on a journey and they had a specific goal. So now what is the moment when we know that goal has been achieved? And this is one of the reasons that the more specific the goal is, the stronger the story. The more your audience can envision what achieving the goal would look like, the more involved your audience will be. It's like what I often say to speakers or storytellers in any arena is, if you're a storyteller, you got to be a screenwriter, because you have to create a movie inside the mind of your audience or inside the minds of your audience so that they can see what's going on. So just the way you watch a movie. So they're there in the story. So we feel like we're in the storm and we're trying to, use the hacksaw to cut loose the boat and so on and so on. Okay, so the climax is the moment the boat was cut loose and everything was okay. And Annie was very clear about that and was pretty vivid about the sense of accomplishment she felt at doing that. And then we come to the last step, step 6, and that is the aftermath. And the aftermath is a picture of the new life your hero is now living, having completed the journey of the story you've told. The journey ends, in a way, at the climax. They've accomplished the goal. The aftermath is, now what is their life like that they've completed that they've accomplished that goal? Or what's it like if they fail to achieve the goal? That could be another kind of story. So in this case, And he also touched on or also had this step because she doesn't stop with I cut loose the boat and the end. It was like now she talks about her new life where whenever she's on a new job, she never dozes off because she carries the passion she got from that journey. And I don't know if you said this exactly, but what I inferred is that you've taken some vacation since, that you learned that you got to have a little more balance than you had before. So what she's saying is this is the aftermath. And when you're telling a story to an audience where you're trying to persuade them to do something, the aftermath for the hero of the story has to match something that you know with some certainty your audience wants. Now, it may not be that anybody is crazy as Annie was and decided going on a life-threatening cruise across the Gulf was a good idea, but that's my personal opinion, Annie, I'm sorry. But we all want, when we're at work, to maintain our passion. We all want balance in our life for the vast majority of people. So the image of never falling asleep at work, that represents real involvement in your work. And if that's what she's really offering to people by following her prescription for a balanced life, that's going to be the thing that's more likely to sway us to follow her model or follow her advice and do the things she's recommending doing. So it's just like the setup is a vivid picture it's the vivid before picture of the life the hero is living. The aftermath is the vivid after picture, just like a weight loss ad with before and after, just a picture of the new life the hero is living, a picture that your audience is going to feel, yeah, I want to have that quality in my life as well. Okay, so before I dive into more specifics with Annie and ask her some questions, let's see if other people on the call have questions about any of those six steps. I realize I railroaded through that. I think it was about a 15-minute lecture there, and usually it's about a two-hour one, but did the best I could in a short time. So does anybody have any questions or confusions about any of those six steps?
Again, you can dial star 2 to raise your virtual hand or click the raise hand button on your screen. Now is a great time to join in. You're getting some really great advice from an expert in the field, and this kind of advice is not usually cheap. So I encourage you to take advantage of it. If you're really trying to improve your stories and deliver the best product that you can.
Keep in mind, if nobody asks any questions, I'm going to be scared that it was so confusing you don't even know what to ask. So at least somebody toss me a pity question just so I'll know you're listening and something got through.
Okay. You know, usually speakers like to talk, but yeah, gone, exactly. Let me see if anybody's typed any questions, because we do have the option for people to type in. And, we got a few people that have decided to type it in, Michael. A couple questions here. So looks like there's some common ones, but here's one that a couple of different people have asked in different ways. In general, what kinds of stories do you find audiences respond to best? Or this one says, what kinds of stories most interest people? How do you know what story to tell?
Well, that's pretty hard to say because it depends on the context, because sometimes people are paying to get information or instruction on something. But if you're talking about an emotional level, the most captivating stories are the stories that involve fear and courage, where the obstacle, okay, where the conflict comes from partially from inside the character, where it's about overcoming fears, especially those fears that we've all experienced and are sort of universal. A fear that we're not good enough, a fear of trust or connection, a fear of being abandoned or betrayed. a fear. Let's see. Those are sort of the big three. I'm not good. Oh, a fear of standing up for ourselves. And finally, a fear of doing what's right regardless of the consequences. The fear being that we're going to lose, we're going to have to leave our comfort zone and lose something that we believe is essential. You know, if I stand up for what I believe in, I could lose my job. That kind of story. Any story where you get to the level of what inner conflict, what the inner struggle of your hero is, and how they find the courage to overcome that, those are going to be the most inspiring and compelling. Not across the board, because it depends. I mean, also, a story that's hilariously funny can also be really emotionally involving, and there may not be any fear involved in that at all. There's certainly going to be conflict. So it depends on the context. But I would say, as a general rule, always look for where can you get to the level of fear and courage for the character instead of simply the steps they took to make more money or whatever it might be.
All right. This is a really interesting question from Katie in Philadelphia. Very unusual, but she is applying to an MBA school admissions, she's applying to an MBA program, and she would like some advice on writing an essay for her school admissions essay. She wants to tell a great story that is compelling and obviously makes the admissions office respond in a very positive way. Do you have any advice for her?
If that person can unmute, I'm curious, what do they think they're looking for in a student? What do you think they want in a student?
Katie, raise your hand. Star 2 or click your raise your hand button. Okay, awesome. Katie, you're on the line.
So I think it really depends from place to place. But in general, they're looking for just motivation and reasons why.
Motivation, I didn't hear somebody was clicking in at the same time. What else besides motivation?
And reasons why.
Reasons why what?
Like, why would that school or program be a good fit?
Yeah, that's sort of what I was asking. Well, okay, so what you want to tell, in this case, you want to tell a story most likely with you as the hero. You want to, I would suggest, tell a story where you were stuck in some way or in some situation where you either longed for something or something where there was a missing piece or whatever, and then something happened that presented you with an obstacle. Now, it could be you had an opportunity that was good. You inherited some money, or you got a chance to go to Europe, okay? But whatever it is that happened, it creates a problem for you, because maybe you had a choice where you could go to Europe, but what your parents were telling you is, or I don't know how old you are, so I don't know if you're just post-college or whatever it might be, but let's say you're that age and your parents were telling you, no, you have a chance to go to summer school. You've got to stay there because you've got to get into a good school. And you had to wrestle with that, and you decided that what you wanted to do was go to Europe, and you had to, or you decided to go to Europe, and something that happened to you there, some obstacles you met and something you happened there that gave you a sense of meaning or courage or something like that, that you ended up feeling was more valuable than going to school. Or usually a story just about making a decision is not good. But what you want to do is you want to tell a story where in the course of the external journey and meeting those obstacles, you also changed internally in some way. You left your comfort zone in some way, and you acquired the value of, or you acquired a principle, or you acquired a skill, although I like something deeper than just simply a skill, in the course of of achieving that goal or going after that goal, or even if you fail to achieve it, something you learn from that, that you now stand by as one of your principles for living. If you can come up with a story like that, where you really reflect some inner journey as well as the accomplishment of the goal, I think that's the kind of story they're going to respond to. It's also going to be the most emotionally involving. And at the end of the day, if your story's good, they're going to stop worrying about what's it about and just get emotionally drawn to it. And then they'll figure, well, okay, you know, this, they'll know you better because of that. And that's going to make you a stronger candidate. But don't when I say, what are they looking for? Don't say, this is the story about how I learned differential calculus, because they're looking for math geniuses, because that's going to be too transparent and it's not going to impress them. It's about how you matured and changed as a person by overcoming obstacles in some specific situation. And then you're telling them, this is what you're getting with me, someone who stands for this. I don't know. I never went to business school, so I don't know that that's what they look for. They may want just differential calculus people, but that's what makes a story good, and I would risk that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely, and I'm not sure either. You know, some of it may be more suitable, let's say, for an undergraduate sort of application versus graduate school.
Don't worry about that. If you're willing to share something that was painful for you, something that was difficult that you did, and take them on that journey you went through, not in a bragging way, but in a story about the struggles you had to overcome and what you did, not bragging about it, but just revealing that out of that came something that made you who you are. It won't matter if it's graduate school or undergraduate, because that's about, here's who I am.
Yeah, I guess my fear is I'm competing with people who are already executives, and part of one of my reasons to get that degree is to be on that level, and maybe I'm not a VP or, you know, CEO of a corporation. So that's what I'm wondering, you know, how can I still show value and I still achieve things in my career, but it's kind of a small window of few hundred words that I have to, like you said, get them to know me as well as link it to professional, potentially professional.
Let me ask you this. Do you think you're going to be any value to the school?
Why do you think?
If you worked for the school, why would you enroll you? What is it you're bringing to the party that executives that are already executives may not have?
Yeah, it's a different
perspective. What do you have to offer if it's not a lot of experience?
Well, it is experience, but it's not that kind of experience. It's different experience, so it's maybe a little bit of a different viewpoint that comes along with it, and different background as well.
Okay, when you say a different viewpoint, so give me an example of a way you see things that someone who has a lot of top executive experience might not see it. Let's say you've been an assistant, a secretary, receptionist, or let's say you've done manual labor before. What did you learn from any of those situations that would be of value to you and the school as you're getting your MBA?
Yes, makes sense. So it's not about, you know, the level of job as much as I come from more of a foreign background, so I felt like, you know, I have that international experience or background and perspective, as well as a small business perspective, and, you know, working for larger companies as well, but not at the executive level. But I also love entrepreneurs and looked at these executives always as more of corporate robots and just really sort of, fancy, all talk, little action kind of politics of a game. And I'm realizing it's not always like that. There is value you can bring through the thought leadership aspect, through just being able to scale an organization to the level that, you know,
okay,
these companies
are going.
Okay, so
I'm sorry, let me interrupt you here. I hear what you're saying. So here's the thing. Don't badmouth the people you're competing with. Don't mention them. But the things that would interest me are, take something from your background, because you're not a native to the United States, it sounds like. So What is some specific goal you achieved or experience you had that follows those six steps that's related to where you come from, that gave you a different principle or a different perspective about things? Or since you've had your own business, tell a story about a big obstacle you faced in starting or running or having your own business and being an entrepreneur and what you got from that. Because to me, if I'm a school, I'm looking for different perspectives. And if I've got somebody who's both been an entrepreneur with their own business and comes from another country and has that perspective, that's going to be valuable. Tell a story about one or both of those.
All right, Michael, okay. We have about 20 minutes left, and I want to be sure that we have time for our last recording.
I thought Annie was the last recording. Okay, well, we got to get back to Annie because I promised I'd give her some coaching. So are you still on the line, Annie?
Of course, I'm here.
You haven't gone away and applied to business school, have you? Because I know how inspiring
nope,
I was about that. Okay, so here's the question I guess I'd ask you. Actually, it's not even a question. Here's the main comment I'd say. You followed the six steps, as I pointed out. So you've got, I don't know if you've already read my book or knows that, but if not, you instinctively have the six steps I'm talking about. But what I don't get is exactly what you're telling me to do so I can have this feeling of balance, because I couldn't connect the dots between the boat and not going to sleep at work, because I'm not clear. Did you get this passion just because now that you know you have a vacation coming? It seems like there was something about cutting loose that boat that you said it made you come alive, but you were talking about coming alive through this whole cruise. So it simply sounded kind of like the act of being on a cruise and having these different experiences that were exciting, you know, sort of pumped you up, and now it helps you get through work. But I don't quite get that. I don't know quite what I'm supposed to go out and do. Just, is it take a vacation? Is it to take a vacation where my life is in danger? What is it? What is your prescription for finding balance in this story?
Yeah, and this small bit is part of a bigger speech that I actually titled a Vacation Challenge, and it's to take a vacation, but one that challenges you to something that you've been wanting to do for a long time. What, some of those things that I'll do this when I get older, or I'll do this when I retire. And my goal is to challenge them to try to do something like that now, like start tomorrow planning that, so that you bring the things you're putting off in your life while your life is passing you by, you bring them into the now and experience the passion and inspiration that you get from those in your current life. And that way it sort of wakes you up, is the theme.
Okay. So, yeah, I guess if it's a little longer, you'd be able to do that. But I'm still, I think that what I didn't get from the story particularly is a real arc. It seemed like you completed your arc when you decided to take the vacation, because I didn't really see any transformation you went through on this cruise. It seemed like you were happy as soon as you were on the boat and away from the office. You had this exciting experience. But even as you talked about the experience, you said your boat was getting tossed around and so on, it didn't honestly sound like much of a conflict. It sounded like, well, yeah, this was exciting, but you made it sound good right when you were in it. I didn't feel like you had obstacles to really overcome. I mean, you did. You didn't want to die at sea, but there was no moment when you were saying, and I thought to myself, why the hell didn't I stay in my office? Because I could die out here. It was just that, well, it was tossed around, and but your tone of voice and your imagery and so on was like watching a kind of an exciting movie without really worrying about the fate of the hero of the movie, because it just seemed like you were having a good time beginning to end. The other thing that I think you didn't get into is any kind of inner journey. I don't know why it was you hadn't taken a vacation before. I don't know what made you think you couldn't take a vacation every year. Why were you so committed to this job that you felt you couldn't? And how did that relate to a deeper fear that came from the past? Did you feel like you wouldn't be accepted if you didn't work that hard? Were you raised to believe you've always got to be the best? Were you raised to believe that anything resembling a vacation is laziness? There was some switch that you had to flip in order to go from being a workaholic to being someone who is willing to have balance in her life. And if you don't, I think, get to that level, if you're not willing to share those deeper fears, then it really, to me, is a story about an exciting incident when you went on a vacation that doesn't really carry much meaning. Because the thing is, we all know we should take vacations. We all say we'd like balance in our lives. And but I don't think hearing about you cutting loose the boat is going to make me more likely to take a vacation if I'm someone who's as much of a workaholic as you are at the start of the story. And I would challenge you to risk going into that place and figuring out what was really going on with you that instilled that inner conflict, instilled that fear, and how did this journey change that for you? Because why was that fear overcome by this journey and not just the fear of going on one vacation? I'm just still not quite getting why that boat adventure keeps you from falling asleep at work now. Because to now have a whole other attitude toward your work, something had to change besides you'd taken a cruise. Do you understand what I'm saying by that?
Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. I think the arc you were talking about would have been the trial, like the moment, that specific moment in the trial when I decided, you know, this is unhealthy for me. But I'd never thought of what got me to that point. I kind of assumed everybody feels the same, but that's a great question to ask me. Like, why do you feel like you can't take a vacation? So that's really going to help me open up that internal struggle more. So, yeah, definitely.
The arc wasn't the trial. You don't want, and if it was, you need to tell the story about the trial, because if the arc is complete at the trial, then you're already evolved, so to speak, when you take the cruise, and then it's just like watching somebody's slides of their vacation. It's a little more exciting than that, but you know what I'm getting at. That's where you want to go. When you were chained to that desk day in and day out, what kept you from taking the vacation, really? Because everybody's busy. We all have the same amount of time, and we all think we should be working all, not everybody, but and the reason you should tell it is because you were right. Most of us do think we should work all the time. But that's what you're telling people. You don't need to, and you're actually robbing yourself of something important by not. But you've got to get to that level of fear and courage to really make that story stronger. And then build in more real conflict with the boat. And one, this is an aside, a sort of a minor thing, but don't call that small boat he. That was so confusing to me because I thought you were talking about someone who was in charge of that little boat on the boat. I couldn't figure that out. I know it was sort of clever to say that boat, he was doing this and he was doing that. But when I first listened to the speech, it's like, who is she talking about? Is there another character we haven't met? So my speech coaching part of me would say, yeah, don't do that. Talk, you know, I at least for me, if I was in the audience, I would be so concerned about that I'd lose touch with what was really going on. But get more into the fear you must have felt when that was going on, and don't reveal how excited you were about it until it was over, maybe.
Okay, great. Okay? Thank you. That's good advice.
Yeah. Okay, that's it. Good. Okay, so I didn't know, do we have a third person on the line that submitted a story? Brian?
Well, we have a third clip that was submitted. This is from Steve Hafner. He was not able to make the call today, or he didn't think he was going to be able to. Steve, if you're on the line, go ahead and dial *2 or raise your hand to let me know that you're here, and I'll bring you in on the line. But we do have a third clip if you'd like to play it. It looks like Steve is not here with us, though.
Well, since we only have 10 minutes left, let's first see if anyone has any questions, because I'd rather answer questions or hear concerns or so on from people who are tuned in, because I mean, we can talk about a clip, but as you can see, I like the speaker to be here so I can ask them questions and kind of find out what they want to accomplish. So if nobody has any questions, sure, let's run the clip and we'll do it. But if anybody does, or if you do, Brian, let's focus on those first, I think.
Okay. I'm looking at the list of people that are on the line with us. We have some really great storytellers that I have seen or personally heard. Jim, you're on the line with us. He knows how to tell a story, a very emotional story. But if you're on the line and you have anything that you'd like to share about storytelling, we'd love to hear that too. Michael, is there an effective way that you recommend speakers use storytelling on stage as a tool to get hired or to get called, to get asked again?
Nothing that's any different than what I've said so far. Because the reason you're going to get hired as a speaker is, number one, do you enthrall your audience? And you enthrall your audience by making the story part of your speech emotionally involving. And to make it emotional, that means, first of all, make sure it's a story where the hero has a goal and you take them through the six steps, and make sure that the obstacles, both inner and outer, that they have to overcome are clear and vivid and significant, that character has a lot on the line, a lot to lose if they fail to achieve that. So it's first, be clear about hero and the six steps, and next, build the conflict so you build more emotion. And then beyond that, there are the craft things or other elements. I'll mention a couple that may be relatable. One is, do you have a theme for this speech? Do you have a theme for the speech? In other words, what is the message you want to give the audience? And then, does the story contribute to reinforcing that theme? Does the story contribute to the message or the action you're urging the audience to take with your speech? So make sure those two are connected. A couple little presentation things. Number one, I am not a fan of announcing the theme before you tell the story. I see this a lot when it comes to like Toastmasters competitions. The speaker will begin by saying, have you thought about how much you should respect your parents? I've never heard something that bad, but anyway, something like that. And then they'll go into a story about how they learned to respect their parents. My belief is you start the speech by starting the story. And if you have something up front that hooks us in, that creates curiosity about what this is going to be about, okay. But my belief, when I coach speakers, I generally say, okay, that's great. Get rid of everything you said until you started the story, and just start with the story. Let us discover the theme, and then you can talk about the theme after the story and go into more detail about it if you want to do that. And I'm trying to think story-related things. I think that's all I got for that question now, unless there's something specific people are wondering about, should I or shouldn't I, in terms of putting
We have a couple of people with questions. Put their hands up.
Good.
All right. First one is Tracy. Go ahead, Tracy.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I start my speech by saying I'm 17 years old, which you look at me and I'm obviously not 17, but I'm talking about a horrific medical diagnosis I received. And then I proceed on telling a little bit more about my story. A month later, I'm going to a movie theater, and my life totally changes because of my medical diagnosis. I'm screaming, crying all the way home, why me, why me? But then I'm laying in bed that night saying, okay, I have two choices. I can be bitter or I can be better. Then I proceed on talking a little bit more about not just my story, but what I'm wanting the audience to learn from my story. But last summer, I rode my bicycle 3,527 miles across the United States to celebrate my 40th anniversary of my diagnosis, because I was told at 17 I'd be dead in 20 years. I've had several people come up, and I'm telling stories about my bicycle ride. And I got lost in the mountain one day because my GPS was not working properly, and I ended up having to climb over boulders, carrying my bicycle, get out of Truckee, California, heading into Reno, Nevada.
Let me interrupt you if I can, because yes. I know you're leading up to a question. Let's jump right to the question since we're running out of time.
Would you start with me being lost in the mountains 40 years later, or would you start off like I typically do now? I'm 17 years old, lying in a hospital bed, fighting for my life.
Okay, the first advice I give before that, that's more important, is don't move in and out of the story. Don't tell part of the story and then give a message to the audience and then go back to the story and give a message. Tell the story. And my instinct would be, yes, tell the story about being on a bike ride and encountering these boulders and so on. And then you can say, as part of the story, you may say to the audience, now, you're probably wondering, in case you're wondering what I was doing up there in the first place, you have to understand that X years before that, when I was 17 years old, that I was there is, according to the doctors, I would have been dead before I got up to that mountain. Or I would already be dead if I followed the doctors. Because you know, when I was 17, and you can flash back and go to that moment when you heard those words from your physician, or when you were lying in the hospital and being told that, and I decided I could either go ahead and live my life or not. And living your life had been what you'd done, and this was the next chapter. But I wasn't sure if I was going to prove the doctors right, because I was going to fall off this mountain or whatever. So I think if you get right to the setup is you on the mountain, or you're actually jumping into the conflict right away and said you're on a mountain, you're stuck on a boulder, your broken bike is lying below you, I don't know all the details. And then you can stop and flash back, so to speak. Go back to the mm-hmm. setup, or the backstory is when you were told, or maybe you don't have to go all the way back there to decide it. You can just announce, you see, when I was 17, I was told that I was not going to live past 37 or whatever it was. And mm-hmm. so my goal had been this, and then you bring us back to the mountain. But the story of you getting over the mountain, or whatever you want to term that, that has to embed in it some arc you went through while you were on that mountain, because you already completed the arc of deciding you were going to live your life fully. So what did you learn on that mountain that we can apply to our own lives? Because what's your arc on the mountain? What's your journey there? What was your goal there? What did you learn by having to get down to the mountain that you didn't know before you got out on the mountain or got on the bike? Because otherwise you're saying, well, I had this adventure, but I was already fully evolved before, because I had my arc when I was 17 and learned to live my life. Did you follow that?
Yes.
In other words, the mountain story sounds to me much better because it's got a specific goal. But then you want to explore what was it about that story, that journey over up and down that mountain, or whatever you want to say. What did you learn from that we can all incorporate? Because it still might be some aspect of living our life fully, but if it's just, you know, go after it, then it seems like a story that's removed from the point in your life when you learned that you had to go after everything. If you're going to have that, then maybe you should tell a story about being in the hospital and then coming up with and then deciding you were going to do one thing that proved you weren't going to fall a victim to this. In other words, maybe it's go back and tell the story about when you learned, no, I've got to do this because I can't be a victim to that diagnosis. And then that's when you showed the courage to do that. And then from then on, you've been able to take those risks. So I'd have to work with you a little more on it to see what really happened on that mountain and what would be the goal, what would be the meaning or the theme tucked into that. But as far as the story itself is concerned, that sounds like it's got more potential to be fun and exciting and scary and funny and so on. So I hope that helped.
All right, Michael. Yeah, I think that was definitely helpful. Thank you. Thank you, Tracy. It is, it's 1:30 and I have one more hand raised. Do you want to take one more question?
Sure.
Or do you have time?
Okay. Do you have time for one more question?
I'm
a busy guy, okay. But, you know, I don't take quizzes, but I can take a question. I've got that.
All right. It looks like Candy is our last question of the day. Go ahead, Candy.
All right. Just want to critique on this very quick intro. I'm Puerto Rican heritage. I grew up in the 1950s and 60s. I got interested in science fiction at age 4. Before 9, I wanted to be an astronaut. I had no role models. I mean, a lot of negativity about being female, but I ended up in the space program. So I wanted to comment. Is that a good summary?
Yes, it's a good summary. It's not a good opening for a speech, though. And it's it's a summary. Summaries don't create emotion. Vivid detail does. I would rather see you paint a picture of being a girl at age, somewhere between 3 and, in your room, all the other kids are playing outside, or you've just immigrated to, I don't know what all your background is. Your parents have sent you to bed. You're under the covers using a flashlight, reading such and such a book. We want to be taken to a scene, a moment that's going to convey what that life is. Or in this case, it's like a prologue. Says you could give us that picture, and then you could say, as much as she dreamed, there's no way that girl under the covers with the flashlight would ever know that 20 years later she'd be in the space program. And then you go to a new story about something in the space program, or how you got in, or what a goal you had once you joined, or how you got in, or whatever it is. That little girl story, but hopscotching through your background and just to get us to the present is not very emotionally involving. It's just sort of facts. It's like biographical data almost, and I don't think that's as emotional.
Well, I guess when you get into the details, it would be. That was just 30 seconds or whatever.
but so is what I said.
And I
think talking of painting a picture, you can have more than 30 seconds, but, having six, 1 or 2 minutes, painting a vivid picture, and you describe yourself, and you describe the surroundings, and you, my mother hollered at me in Spanish, and give some dialogue, or to convey with the details what your life was then. But it's make it a scene, make it a real vivid snapshot of one moment, rather than list, than a bullet point of your life story.
Okay.
That's my advice. That's my answer to that question. Not exactly. It wasn't as fun as a cruise, but that's what it is. That's the best I got for my last question. So anyway, I think Brian, hopefully everybody got that. If anybody else has questions, I think they can post them, and then I'll take a look and see if I can be of help answering any of the others and so on. And we should also tell people, if they want more information about the 6 steps, I have a free ebook that outlines them in more detail and actually has an example of a story that I wrote based on a story a client told me that illustrates how those 6 steps can be used and how you create emotion and other details of creating a story. It's in written form, but it was designed to be a speech for the client. It's like a signature sort of autobiographical story about what he learned when he ran a marathon. So if anybody would like to see that for free, I have a link, and I think you're going to post it that they can go to get the ebook for free.
It is. It's posted on the replay page. It's under the show notes, speakermatch.com/radio. There's a full replay of this call. And the show notes are there with the link to storymastery.com/6steps. And it's the digit 6. So
yeah,
storymastery.com/6steps. Michael, and the best way for people to reach you is through storymastery.com. Is that correct?
Yeah, just go to my website. It's storymastery.com. And then there's an abundance of, you know, articles and recordings and Q&As and a lot of free information and valuable information there, along with information on my book and products and so on. But also there's a contact me or contact us button. And if you click that, any email you send to that will come to me.
All right. And I have actually seen Michael in person several times working with speakers. I've seen the work that he does. I can vouch for him. He knows what he's doing. He can take just a few words and move things around, change the way that you say some things, really add a little tiny piece to your story that can really make a huge difference. So I highly recommend Michael for his advice on storytelling. And Michael, you're available as a coach also, right?
Well, yeah, that's the primary thing I do. Besides yammer at people online and, you know, berate them and make them sweat with questions. But yeah, primarily I'm a consultant. I work with, well, as you said, my background's in Hollywood, but I coach speakers as well as business leaders and marketers and entrepreneurs, anyone who wants to use storytelling to make more money and change more people's lives. So that's what I do, one-on-one coaching. And you can find all about that by going to my website as well. And I hope you will.
Okay,
I'd love to
once
work
again.
With you individually.
So Michael Haig, storymastery.com. Thank you so much for spending time with us, Michael. This was great, really great advice. And I thought that we had some really good examples. And I enjoyed your critiques very much.
You too. Well, thanks
for
to
our
everybody
listeners.
For tuning in and asking questions. And thank you, Brian. This is fun as always.
All right. For our listeners, if you value today's call or any previous interviews that you've listened to, we would really appreciate it if you could take just a few minutes to go on to iTunes, search for Speaker Match, and click the review tab. It's really very, very helpful to us, means a lot, and it helps us to bring on other great guests like Michael. So that we can continue to enrich you. Until next time, this is Brian Kaplowitz. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks for listening to this installment of the Speaker Match radio series, Success Strategies for Speakers from the Pros. Speaker Match is the leading provider of tools and services for emerging professional speakers. You can find more information about Speaker Match at www.speakermatch.com. Our toll-free number, if you prefer to reach us by phone, is 1-866-372-8768. International callers can reach us at area code 512-372-8768. Thank you again for listening, and we wish you the best in your speaking career.